Welcome to The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, squeeze language's cheeks and say, haven't you grown? Coming up in the show are some words which you may find distressing if you're the kind of person who punches the tabletop whenever you hear something like irregardless. On our current theme of the misuse of English, listener John tweeted me, I'm in a lecture where the presenter has said the whole gamete, when they mean gamut, three times. How do you politely point out this kind of thing? Typically, John, combining politeness with pedantry doesn't tend to turn out all that well, but how about this? Pick out a tasteful and inoffensive greetings card, such as you might send your grandmother for her birthday, maybe with a picture of some Etruscan pottery or a black and white photo of a lily pond. Inside, you write the following. Dear lecturer, thank you so much for the lecture, which I found very thought-provoking, to wit, the word gamete, which, as we both know, means a sexual reproductive cell, is from the ancient Greek gamos, meaning marriage, suggesting the romantic union between gamete and gamete at conception, whereas gamut, which, as we both know, means the full range of something, is a contraction of the medieval Latin phrase gamma ut, the gamma being the Greek letter G, which indicated the note on the musical scale below A, and ut, which, around the 11th century, was the first note in the musical scale. Ut re mi fa sol la. Ut was later replaced by do, for reasons I can't get into because I'm running out of space on this card. Anyway, gamete and gamut, similar sounding, but really such different words. I know I won't be muddling them up in future, and maybe you won't either. Best wishes, John. On with the show.
Previously on The Allusionist.
Why is the English language such an idiosyncratic mess? And why has nobody tried to sort it out?
They tried, but it didn't work.
You can't control how people use English.
If you press down on a sandwich to make it tidier, the filling will just squirt out the sides.
But they're using it wrong!
How can you know what's right or wrong when many of the rules are fabrications?
They've rearranged all the aisles in the supermarket and now I can't find the toothpaste!
I need stability! Tell me English can be fixed!
Do you mean fixed as in mended or fixed as in made stable?
I mean both, damn it!
Also, better not forget the getting your pet fixed sense of fixed, as much of the resistance to fixing the English language rests on not wanting to neuter it. But since English is not fixed, in any of the senses, that leaves it evolving with abandon in many diverse directions.
My name's Hampton Catlin, and I'm the co-founder of Wordset.
I'm Michael Catlin, and I'm also a co-founder of Wordset.
Collaborative dictionary that's meant to cover all the different types of English.
Yeah. That's right, Hampton and Michael have set themselves the tiny and simple task of collecting every form of English around the whole world.
You know, one of our goals is to represent forms of English that are not typically represented in dictionaries. So Indian English, we're including
South African English.
Yeah.
AAVE.
Yeah, which is known as Ebonics. Yeah, we want to include all that because that's all English.
They've even come across a modern strain of English that I'd never heard.
We ended up discovering that there is a whole other group of English speakers that you don't normally think of. It's a very small group. They speak a very strange version of English, and they're some of the most powerful people on the planet.
Right.
Like, very directly. They directly probably influence your life or all of our lives. Yeah, and they speak a pidgin of English. Hmm. And it's often known as Euro-English or Euro-speak.
And who are they? The officials of the European Union.
Euro-English is the English spoken by technocrats at the EU. Most of them don't speak English as a first language. And so what's happened is that they've kind of misappropriated English words and misunderstand what they mean. And they've kind of invented new words. One of my favorites is planification.
Excuse me?
Yep. Planification. And you might say, well, what is planification? It's just planning. That's it.
The same.
Sitting. It's just exactly...
Why do they have to do it to that poor word?
I don't know. I don't know if it's... I guess the ing suffix is kind of an English thing, whereas ification is a little bit more Latinate.
It's a little French, right?
I guess.
Yeah. So a lot of these are false friends, and a lot of them come from French. So...
Like actual means current. You know, you say, our actual head of sales is whatever, means our current head of sales. But I remember learning actuellement in French, which means currently, and I think Spanish it's something similar. Mm. And so it seems like some of these are also ways to prevent confusion, where English is the only language where it actually means the potentially distinct meaning.
And yet it creates confusion.
Yes, because I guess there's an equal spread of different native languages in the EU.
There's 23 languages in the EU.
There you go. And I guess only two islands in the UK are going to be native speakers, so I don't know if they get much of a vote as to whether actual should mean actual or current.
One feature of Euro English is words that hitherto were not verbs are now used as verbs. To badge means to give someone a badge. Yeah, makes sense. To visa means to approve. And I'm really not sure what to precise means.
I'm not comfortable with that either. There's a lot of, weird verbing.
And even commonplace verbs such as to value can be transformed into other verbs.
Valorize is to add value to something or to assign value, depending on the circumstances.
Let's valorize this piece of land or something.
Yeah. We're going to try to valorize. I can't even say it.
Valorize
our, helpfulness to the community.
Yeah.
Which means to, improve the value of.
Does valor, as in the British English word, strength or whatever, come from value, I guess, then?
Yes, valor and value both descend from the Latin valere, to be of worth. But I don't think it particularly helps if words share a root, if in the intervening millennia they've diverged and taken on separate meanings. Take the word actor. I think it's reasonable to assume that to most people, the word actor describes someone who portrays characters in dramatic productions, but you can see alternatively how the word can literally mean a person who acts, i.e. who does something, which is how it's used now in Euro English. And accordingly, actor has spawned another noun, actorness.
Actorness, which is the level with which you are involved in something.
Yeah.
So I could say my actorness is low in doing the laundry, because Michael usually does laundry. But I have high actorness in cleaning the bathroom.
There you go.
So see, it totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Is one of the problems here that they're being too literal? So they've got actor, as in one who acts, as in one who takes action. But English is not a literal language. English has travelled all over the place to come up with what we've got now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're trying to bring a formality to the language. Mm-hmm. I mean, whenever, we were trying to find samples that weren't hyper-formal, and there are none.
Obviously, this language is being used to write laws and memos, and it's not as if they're writing poetry or novels where one thing can mean another. I think it is very literal, but I don't think it has to be anything else.
It shows how English fails if you approach it methodically or logically.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I should have phrased that thought differently. English is a language which is not very logical or well-behaved. These European Union technocrats are trying to apply logic to it, and thus a new version of English has been born. It will probably be healthier to think of it not as incorrect English, but as a separate language with origins in common with British English. And while I may mock words like actiness and planification, I do think there might be valorization in observing this fledgling form of English that's being shaped by people who don't have a native acquaintance with English, free from the influences of the past and not conditioned to tolerate or assimilate the irregularities of the present. They might be establishing the most efficient modes of expression, not walking along the path around the lawn, but cutting straight across the grass.
What fascinates us about language is how it evolves naturally. This makes me so happy that this actually happened. It doesn't make me outraged that they're changing English. I love that there's this little community that are all kind of forming a new language by combining a lot of it's very, very technical sounding, very formal.
Yeah, there's also a lot of business jargon, corporate jargon, hierarchical superior instead of saying boss. Or fiche for
I love fiche.
A printout.
A fiche is a French word. It is used in French now commonly. And it comes from microfiche, because you would use a microfiche to print up things. And it now just means any kind of printed material that you're given. So they use that in English a lot because, they have a lot of welcome to the meeting, here's your fiche.
Yeah.
Which I kind of really like that word, to be honest. Not that I have a lot of...
Especially because when we were trying to come up with what the actual British English or... Well, you had packet, but I don't know.
Yeah, we say packet.
I don't like that. I prefer fish.
Forget what I said before. This is the version of English that will be mandatory when robots conquer humanity.
We have a global network where people can speak English. To communicate effectively, you do need to have some compromises.
So tough luck, English. Variations are the price of popularity, and it's your fault for being the most widely spoken language geographically.
Like, when you're the lingua franca of the modern age, you kind of lose control of your language a bit, at least if you're doing it right, because it's used by all sorts of people who don't speak it natively.
And as became clear in the last episode, you can't wrestle control of a language from the myriad people who use it.
When you're a language of commerce and business and government, it kind of takes a life of its own. It leaves its homeland. It's like going off to school. You know, and there's kind of this English that is there that is not ours anymore in a way, because it's everyone in Europe's. And I think there's something kind of romantic about that myself. I know, just thinking of technocrats misusing words isn't what everyone would call romantic, but...
Hampton and Michael Catlin founded the collaborative dictionary WordSet, which they plan to make the best dictionary in the world. If you want to pitch in, go to wordset.org. And you can also hear them on their podcast, We Have a Microphone. Meanwhile, if you want to immerse yourself in the unlikely romance of technocratic English misuse, the resource the Catlins recommend is the 66-page report from the European Court of Auditors called Misused English Words and Expressions in EU Publications. However, it's not intended to be a study guide. It's trying to stamp out all these rogue linguistic developments and return British English to the EU linguistic throne. TLDR, it's a 66-page primal scream of pedantic misery.
If you want the most thrilling EU report you can possibly read for a person who'd be listening to this podcast, you should check out Misused English Terminology in EU Publications.
I like the little landmines of emotion that you can find in it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely. It's
very passive aggressive.
It's
just regularly aggressive at times.
Today's episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman. Thanks to Hampton and Michael Catlin, Matthew Crosby, and Martin Ostrich for the music. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is... gleet. Noun, a watery discharge from the urethra caused by gonorrheal infection. I hope you don't have to use it in an email today. You can find me at Twitter and Facebook /AllusionistShow and at theallusionist.org. Until next time, in Euro-English style, I bid you farewellifications.